Will you pray with me? Lord, now may the words of my mouth and may the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. There's a charming Norman Rockwell image that debuted on the cover of the Saturday Evening Post 60 years ago this week, in fact. A perfect, iconic summer scene entitled Boy on a High Dive. The pool isn't pictured at all. It's just the diving board, and we see it from an angle below looking up. Way up there, the board sticks out into the sky, and we can see the sign just underneath it, which says, High Dive, 20 feet. And there on the board, at the very edge, peeking out, is a boy, maybe 10 years old, and he is on his knees, and his hands are clutching the end of the board. And we can only see the top of his face peeking out. His eyes are wide and his eyebrows are high. And we wonder, will he jump? Or will he scoot back to the ladder to climb back down to safety? Whether or not you've ever been on the high dive, you know that moment. You know that moment, the moment you have to make the choice between jumping forward or backing down. You're caught between the fear of moving ahead and the fear of going back. And you have to make a decision between two fears without being certain of the outcome. I'll never forget my first time on the high dive when I was 10 years old, standing up there shivering and looking down at the water, which seemed impossibly far away. I was so much higher than I thought it was going to be, and I really wanted to turn around. I wanted to go back, but there were already kids on that ladder back there. And which is worse, the jump, the splash, or the absolute embarrassment that faces you back there? I did jump, by the way. Sometimes in that liminal moment, the moment between taking the plunge or pulling back, we can't even name what it is we're most afraid of. We don't even know sometimes what we fear. We just know we are afraid. I wonder how scared the disciples were that night in the boat. Jesus had pushed them out on their own while he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. They had received the hard news that John the Baptist had been killed. And Jesus had been trying to get some time alone with his grief and with his God. But the crowds had followed him, and he had compassion on them, and he cured them of their illnesses, and as we heard last week, he fed them all. And then once everyone had been fed, he dismissed them, and he sent the disciples on ahead, and now he finally gets some time to himself, to grieve, to reflect, and to pray. And it's a powerful reminder of how important it is to step back from the demands of life, to rest, to connect with God. While he was doing that, the disciples spent that night in a boat battered by the wind and the waves. Imagine it, this little boat, not all that big, with 12 men in it, creaking, the waves roiling, the wind knocking the vessel about, and all of it happening in the dark of the night. Now, of course, Many of the disciples were fishermen, so maybe being tossed about at sea in the dark wasn't all that scary for them. But what they saw while they were out there surely was. Because as the morning light began to break, and the winds and the waves were still storming all around them, they looked out on the water and saw there in the distance a figure, a man, walking towards them on the sea. And they were terrified, of course. They thought it was a ghost. But immediately Jesus called out to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Did that quiet their fear? Or does seeing a man walk on the sea freak a person out, even if they know who it is? Peter, of course, called back to him, "Lord, if it is you, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." Why? Why is Peter doing this? Is it ego? Does he want to act big and look good in front of the others? Is it some sort of test? Is the important part of that question the if? If it is you, then do this. Or is it some sincere desire to get out there with this man who has compelled them so far? Is it this yearning to find a deeper union with him? Is it a longing to follow him in this new way? Whatever the reason, he asked Jesus to command him to come. And Jesus says, "All right, come on." In that moment before going forward, this is all Peter needs. Come. And Peter clambers on out of the boat. He's less here like a child on a high dive than he is like a toddler who's just beginning to walk. You know how that happens? How sometimes when a child is just on the verge, how you can like take them around by the hand and they're okay, but they can't yet do it on their own. They're able to stay upright as long as they're holding on to someone or holding on to something. And then one day, you're helping them along, and they're just concentrating on moving forward, and then you just kind of lightly let go and withdraw your hand before they realize it, and they're still upright, and they're still moving forward, and they're walking for real until they realize they're walking alone, and then boom, down they go. It's kind of like that. The amazing thing, of course, is that when Jesus says, "Come," Peter just does it. He gets out of the boat. And the other amazing thing is, once he gets out of the boat, he really does start walking on water. All it took was Jesus' call. And Peter is up and out there, cruising towards Jesus on the waves, right up until he realizes what he's doing. Right up until he realizes that wind is still strong. Those waves are still crashing. There's a storm still going, and he's not on solid ground. He's on the dark sea. And when he sees all of these things, the wind and the waves, down he goes. As he sinks, he cries out to Jesus for help, and Jesus immediately reaches out his hand and catches him. Have you ever been caught like that? Not that specific circumstance, but maybe as a child you started to step out into the street and a parent's hand jerked you back onto the curb because you hadn't seen what was coming. Or you were walking and you stumbled and you started to pitch forward, but a companion caught your elbow and kept you from falling down. I once got knocked out of a boat while whitewater rafting when we hit a rock, and I just popped right out over into the water. I had plunged all the way in before I even realized what had happened. A friend of mine in the boat had pulled me up and hauled me back in by my life jacket. I'll never forget that feeling. It's unforgettable. To feel yourself in the midst of a fall, and then to feel that hand or those arms that catch you. There's nothing quite like it. There's a surge of fear followed by this flood of relief. And when you look back on it, it's startling to realize how close you came to harm, but you didn't, because someone was there and you were caught. And the thing about it is, they're catching you doesn't depend on your belief that they're going to catch you. They're catching you doesn't depend on your not being afraid. It doesn't depend on you trusting that you're not going to fall, because the fact is you were going to fall, except they caught you. They're catching you just depends on your falling and on your needing help and on them helping you. Jesus reached out his hand and he caught Peter and he said, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And we usually hear those words as some kind of chastisement. It's a judgment. It's a criticism. It's Jesus telling Peter. It's Jesus telling us we don't have enough faith. It's every voice we've ever heard in our lives telling us we aren't good enough. We aren't trying hard enough. We aren't faithful enough. We aren't worthy enough. We're not doing enough of the right kind of things. We aren't enough. But if you read the stories of Jesus in Matthew, you'll discover something different. You'll discover something pretty tender about these words. Jesus only ever uses this term, "you of little faith." He only ever uses this of people who are following him. He uses it repeatedly, and he uses it in a way that so often sounds almost like teasing, like an endearment. Over and over in Matthew, he speaks to the people who have already stepped out in faith, and he calls them the little faith ones. The focus seems to be less on the faith they lack than on the little faith they have. A little faith can be enough. It can be enough to get you out of the safe boat, make the leap into the unknown. It can be enough to start you walking through the storm, walking on the water, even moving mountains at times. A little faith is enough to get us going in the direction of Jesus, which of course doesn't mean that the way will be easy or smooth or successful. Peter is sinking. He cries out for help. Jesus reaches out his hand and saves him. And why on earth would Jesus chastise him in this moment? Hear the affection. "Oh, you have little faith. Why did you doubt?" And there are many answers to that question for us. There are as many answers to this question as there are to the question of what it is we're afraid of. In fact, maybe it's the same question, and maybe they are the same answers. We are caught between wanting to step forward in faith and being afraid of getting hurt. Between wanting to leap off the high dive and wanting to cling to where we already are. We are caught in our inability to truly believe God is present and powerful and loving. We are caught between the desire to take a risk that really matters and a need to stay safe and comfortable. And which one do we fear more? Sometimes we muster up a little faith, enough to take a small step forward, and we think if we're faithful, that should be enough. Things should now be okay. It should be smooth sailing, and everything should work out fine, but that's not really how it goes. We get out there, and we see the waves, and we feel the wind, and we feel the fear, and we start to sink, and really hard things happen to us and around us, even when we're faithful. We step out to follow Jesus, and still things happen that feel like they're going to break us or drown us or kill us. And sometimes our vision is so filled with the wind and the waves, the real pain of our lives and in our world, that we cannot see that there is something else in our lives too. There is one who is always moving towards us, saying, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." And he catches us when we fall, when we fear, when we sink, when we doubt, when we hurt, when we don't believe he's really there, when we try to believe but cannot trust, when we cannot say our prayers, when we cannot see a way forward, when we think our faith is gone. He catches us because his catch does not depend on our faith, our belief, our confidence, our accomplishments, our abilities to do the right thing, our ability to have a positive attitude, or our saying the right prayers. It doesn't depend on us. It depends on him. He came to save because we cannot save ourselves. Friends, we are living in a time of such cruelty and hate, and there are people claiming the same name as we do, Christian, who twist the truth of God's love into justifications for so much ugliness, racism, white supremacy, and so many forms of violence and hate. And in the face of this turmoil, this storm, we feel, many of us, so helpless and overwhelmed and angry and despairing, and we cannot see a way, and we cannot muster the faith. And we may not even know what Jesus is calling us towards, but know this. He still says, "Come, it is I am here." And in the midst of all of that, which is so difficult, many of us are also fighting our own personal battles, struggling with our own very difficult challenges and decisions and pain and fear. The storms in our lives are very real. But so is God, whose voice calls to us, whose love catches us, and whose grace will carry us all the way.